Israel's election remains too close to call between Benjamin Netanyahu and challenger Benny Gantz.
I think this could take weeks, if not months, to sort out.
And we're expecting a rate cut at the end of the Fed's two-day policy meeting today. The big question?
How will Powell and his colleagues characterize the outlook for additional rate reductions in the weeks and months to come?
Plus, Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden gain in a new poll of Democratic voters. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a closer look at why the outcome of Israel's election is so close, here's what you missed. You might have had a personal winner after last week's Democratic presidential debate in Texas, but here's Ken Thomas with what a new Wall Street Journal NBC News poll of Democratic voters found.
This was the first major poll that was taken since last week's debate in Houston, and it shows that Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren are starting to show signs of separating themselves and breaking apart from this large pack of Democrats who have been attempting to challenge President Trump. After Biden and Warren, Bernie Sanders was the only other candidate in the poll with double-digit support.
In fact, Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren were the only two candidates whose support has grown meaningfully since July. But it's a different type of support for each candidate. Here's Ken again.
When you drill down into the poll, it shows that Biden has strength among voters who are age 50 and older, and he has strong support among African American voters. Those are two groups who often hold sway in Democratic primaries. What's notable for Senator Warren in this poll is that 70% of primary voters said that they were either enthusiastic about her or comfortable with her candidacy. And those are much higher numbers than Biden's and Sanders. And it could be a sign that the big crowds that have been coming to Warren's rallies speak to a durable voting bloc that she may be assembling around the country.
Our final analysis of the numbers, well, they show it could be a long slog for any candidate not in that top tier who's trying to gain momentum. And Facebook is forming an independent board to help it deal with content decisions. It will be paid for by an outside trust and consist of 40 paid, part-time members. From San Francisco, Jeff Horowitz explains why Facebook decided to form the board.
Facebook basically has said, and Mark Zuckerberg has said, that the company really shouldn't be in the position of determining sort of the standards for the internet and what's worthy of being taken down. And so what this group is going to do is, to some degree, operate as an appellate court. In other words, Facebook's going to take its whack at providing an answer, and if someone doesn't like that answer, they can appeal, and this group will either determine that, in fact, the content is legitimate and should stay up or is problematic and should be taken down and sort of have to explain itself publicly.
Facebook said that the initial board members will be announced within the next few months and that the review panels will aim to begin issuing decisions on the content by early next year. And do you pay your phone or cable bill on time? I'm not being nosy. It's just that soon that data might help you get a loan. Equifax will start giving you and me the option of letting lenders review our bills. Why? Well, it's all part of a larger trend to give lenders more data to determine whether they should approve loans. Equifax says it's aimed at better assessing people who have no credit reports or scores. Now, our main story this morning. We're going to head to Israel. As of this recording, elections there remained too close to call. It's a major setback for Benjamin Netanyahu, and it comes at a time when tensions are already rising between Iran and the U.S.'s Middle East allies. To find out more about what's led to the deadlock, I rang up a very tired Felicia Schwartz, who's been watching the results come in overnight in Jerusalem. So, Felicia, why is the race so close?
Well, Israel has a very complicated parliamentary system in which no party has got a 61-seat majority in decades. So they have to form coalitions. And basically, the exit polls show, and it's looking like the final results will probably reflect something similar, that neither Netanyahu nor his main rival, Benny Gantz, have a majority of people supporting them to form the government. So it very hard to tell the road ahead.
Now, this is the second time Israelis have gone to the polls in 5 months. What's changed?
Actually, not very much other than, well, two things. One, Israeli Arab turnout was much higher this time. I think the Arab parties got, it looks like, an additional 3 seats. So that's one thing. And then the second is that Avigdor Lieberman, he is the head of a party called Yisrael Beiteinu that in the past has sat in Netanyahu's right religious bloc, decided not to join Mr. Netanyahu's government in April, which helped prompt the new elections. And he's demanding a unity government without the religious parties. So because of that demand, that's changing the map a little bit.
So what does this uncertainty about the outcome mean for the region?
Yeah, I think this could take weeks, if not months, to sort out. Netanyahu has been a very close partner to President Trump in his efforts to counter Iran. I guess it's just a little too soon to speculate about what happens after the attacks in Saudi Arabia over the weekend. But if there was going to be some sort of military response on the part of the U.S., which isn't looking super immediate or likely necessarily, if there would be retaliation in Israel, there's a caretaker government here. But I think it's all a bit speculative, but certainly could be an uncertain moment here during a turbulent time.
And I know it's also probably too soon to say, but what does this mean for any sort of peace plan?
The Trump administration hasn't put out their peace plan yet. They said they would do so soon after elections, right before the election. Prime Minister Netanyahu said if he won, the elections would go right ahead and annex a large swath of the West Bank, about a third. So I guess it just depends on the makeup of the government. And if the Trump administration, for some reason, decides to use their plan as some sort of bargaining chip in the coalition negotiations. But I think we'll have to wait and see.
We'll have the latest updates on the outcome of the vote up on WSJ.com. On to markets. Later in the show, we'll look at what we're expecting from the conclusion of the Fed's 2-day policy meeting. Hint, a rate cut. But for now, we're going to talk about index funds. You might be invested in one. They broadly track the performance of selected stocks on an exchange like the S&P 500. They're different than many active mutual funds, which involve money managers choosing specific stocks to put into a portfolio that hopefully beats the market. Now, we're reporting that for the first time ever, more of us have put money in those passive funds than the active ones. It's one of the most dramatic transformations in the history of financial markets. Quentin Webb explains.
The main reason for this really is one of costs. Over the long term, you know, money has switched out of active funds into passive ones, quite simply because it's a lot cheaper to run them. And so the money managers behind them, big groups like BlackRock, Vanguard and State Street, can charge much lower fees. On top of that, sort of insult to injury, many active managers for a long time have struggled to beat the benchmarks which they track their performance against. You know, it is hard to consistently beat the wisdom of the broader market. If the broader market has already priced the stock appropriately, it's quite hard to stand out by finding a bargain. And on top of that, if you are an investor in an active fund, you start from a disadvantage because you're already paying a bigger chunk of the money that you've entrusted to your manager to them, because they're an active manager, they charge higher fees. So that's why we've seen this decades-long advance of passive investing, largely at the expense of active management.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. The Fed. The FOMC concludes its 2-day policy meeting this afternoon. We're expecting that they'll announce a further 0.25% rate cut. That would leave their target federal funds rate at a range of between 1.75 and 2%. So what's changed since when they last met in July? Here's our Fed reporter Nick Timmerosch with more from Washington.
If you look back, what's changed for the Fed since their meeting at the end of July, which was when they cut interest rates? They also said at that time they were cutting interest rates because of trade policy uncertainty, because of weaker global growth, and because of muted inflation. If you take those first two items, global growth looks as bad or worse now as it did then. Trade uncertainty has gotten worse. So the Fed right now is facing an uncertain outlook where the economic data in the U.S. has been okay. The risk picture, on the other hand, does look worse. And so the challenge for the Fed is, how do you tell people what you're going to do with policy 6 months or 12 months ahead when you just don't really know?
We'll have an update in our afternoon edition about just what Chair Jerome Powell had to say. And keep an eye out for this today. The Trump administration is planning to revoke California's waiver to set its own tailpipe emission rules. You might remember we discussed this last week. It's an escalation of a fight between the state and the administration that's challenging the car industry. According to one administration official, the move to rescind the waiver is still under review and could be delayed. But we're reporting that rescinding the waiver would fulfill a big goal of the Trump administration. That's to curb California's influence over the car industry. Finally, an upside of the streaming wars? It's led to a classic TV arms race. We're reporting that entertainment companies have spent more than $2 billion, yes, with a B, on classic television shows in recent weeks. Some examples? AT&T's WarnerMedia just struck a deal for The Big Bang Theory, NBC Universal scooped up Parks and Rec, and you might have guessed from the beginning of this item, Netflix went for Seinfeld. The whole idea is to win us over to their streaming services at a time when we're about to have many more options to choose from. And it's not just old shows. Streaming services are shelling out between $8 and $15 million an episode for new shows. That's significantly more than what the average TV show used to cost. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.